This is an AMI podcast.
Hey guys, welcome along to another episode of Double Tap. It is Friday, it's the 15th of March 2024. Coming up, we are joined by Jeff Hatter, who today will tell us all about Typeahead AI, bringing screen reading assistance to the Mac.
You're listening to Double Tap, your daily accessible technology show. Now, here's your hosts, Stephen Scott and Sean Preece.
Hey, Sean Preece, how are you doing today?
I am terrible today, Stephen Scott. How are you?
I am beautiful as always. Thank you. Thank you.
Oh,
thank
round of you, applause everyone. You get. Well done. Triggered by yourself.
Just for being me. Yes. Right, why are you terrible? What's wrong with you?
Oh, I've had a bad start to the day already. I took a little saunter to the local shop. I needed to pick up some bits and bobs. And everything was great. It was absolutely fine. I even took my Vienna backpack with me, Stephen Scott. You know, I went full blindy uniform. I had a backpack on.
Oh, Vienna.
Yes. And as I was leaving, I caught my tip under the refrigerator and I was stuck. That's it. And it was
do you want to maybe expand on that sentence just a little bit for people? Just I'm thinking about some people who might tune in who think, hang on, what did he just say?
I caught my tip of my cane, obviously.
Ah,
the tip of my cane. My ball got stuck under the, you know, the refrigerated cabinets containing all the canned drinks. And I was so suave. I was so elegant in there. I didn't hit anything. I didn't knock anything off.
Never.
I was great. I've even taught them in there, please don't open the door for me. It's absolutely fine. It's actually more
difficult. You taught
them?
Hold a little class, did you? They all sat down and the pens and papers and said, what do we do now, Mr. Priest? And they said,
no.
Don't open the door.
For the last 5 years since I moved here, every time I go in, they say, I'll get the door for you. And they rush past me and open the door. And, you know, I've been going, yeah, thanks. I just walk it out. And I actually, last week, I actually said, you know what? Thank you so much, but it's actually easier if you don't open the door for me.
It's getting in the way, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. It's easier if I just do it myself. And they went, oh, right. Oh, that's good to know. Okay, no problem. So, you know, I passed on some knowledge there. I made the world a better place, I believe, at least just for me.
You're a hero.
Thank you. But then, as I was leaving today, I was just swishing around, as you do with your cane, and it just got stuck and lodged under the refrigerator. And you think, that's not a problem, just give it a gentle pull. And of course, the elastic starts stretching and it becomes like a 10-foot cane. And
that's
it was well stuck under there and someone had to help me unlodge my tip.
Is this like
never a great start to the day?
No, it's definitely not, and one I would not try at home. But you know, it's like those videos that you sometimes see of online people rushing to the aid of someone who's maybe got their foot trapped between a train and a platform.
Oh yes,
and
yes.
There was a video. It was a famous video of like a whole bunch of people pushing on the side of the train to almost try and lift the train.
Yes,
I mean, how that was even possible, I don't know, but just sheer force and it was able to just dislodge just enough so that the person could get their foot out. Is that the kind of heroism?
That's what it was like.
That I was aiming for. I was trying to kind of, in my head it was heroic, and I'm thinking, how do I get to heroism? I couldn't quite get there.
That's right. People came rushing to my aid. It was like a conga line of people behind me just pulling me. And the cane was stretching. And it was fine. But it's just one of those things where, you know what, I was doing fine. Everything was great in the world. I was whistling, birds were singing. And it's just, I'm stuck here now for a second. And it's just one of those, you know, where you go, okay, yes, I remember.
The good thing you do, which I have to say you're very good at, is laughing off situations. When inside, I know you're dying. It is just kind of it's just the way you laugh your way through it. It's just, but it's also like watching an itchy and scratchy program.
It's laugh or cry. No, it's fine. It's
but
all
equally
fine.
fatal at the end. Well, listen. Speaking of which. I received in the post my very own.
What's even bought this week?
Wait, that was loud. Well,
oh, that was loud. Yeah, that was louder than I was expecting it to be. What arrived in the post was a cane, a brand new cane from America. I mean, it could have came from anywhere, to be perfectly honest. I said it was made in China, so really it came from there.
Was it from Amazon?
Yes, this was the first. Remember, I mentioned this to you a while ago. I was talking about this cane I had found, and it was like £30, so like $40 or $45 Canadian. And a really cheap white cane. And I kind I didn't really hold cheap. Much hope. Well, you know, I mean, about half the price of what I would pay for an equivalent from, say, Ambutech or otherwise.
The point being was that on our Vienna trip recently, I was saying that I forgot to order my cane because I wanted a fresh cane, you know, box fresh cane, because mine is all tatty and, you know, I've got one cane that I use all the time. I'm sure it's absolutely filthy. So I wanted a fresh cane for my trip and I forgot. And the thing I brought up was, how quickly can you get a replacement cane?
And well, not very quickly.
No, it was days and days and days. And then you said you'd found one online for next day delivery. But there was a problem with it, though.
Well, two issues. Well, one, it wasn't next day. It did require import fees, although I didn't pay any import fees for it, probably because the value of it wasn't that high. But it definitely took it longer to get here. I mean, even I will not expect next day delivery from China. I think that's asking a lot.
Yeah, but why is it? Why can't we get quick, fast delivery on canes? Why is that? Why aren't they on online shopping stores for 2-day delivery, next day delivery? Why is that?
I don't know. I honestly don't know.
But why has it had to come all the way from China?
Well, that's I don't really know why this came from China. Well, I do know because it was cheap, and I don't know the origin of this cane at all. I just know that the company behind it is named as Vision U with the letter U, and they sell these canes on Amazon. Now, here's the thing: you would expect this to be quite cheap. I would certainly expect it to be cheaply made, maybe not survive very much. First experience was when I got out of the box or the little parcel it came in. It had its own bag. It had a little velvet bag.
No,
I never had a bag for my cane. You'd always have to go and buy one. It came with its own bag.
That's impressive.
So then I get the cane out. And one thing I noticed was it was like a child's cane. It was so small. And I thought, oh, no, hang on. Please tell me I've got the wrong, the right size.
Yes.
But it was the right size. But it was like in six parts. So it meant that the segments were much smaller, meaning it was much easier and smaller to carry about. So I got a really long cane, but a much smaller cane segments. Now, that, of course, could work in my favour and work against me, depending on what happens to this cane over time. But I know you can get these canes, and you can do this with other canes as well. You can get them in different segment lengths or segment sizes. So anyway, this one had quite small segments, and I think it was a 145-centimetre cane. I changed the tip on it, and the good thing was it uses the same tips as the Ambutech cane, so it's a hook style.
A what style?
Hook.
Oh, right.
I'm saying it properly, as in captain, hook.
Yes, very good.
I'm trying, sir. I'm trying, Mr. Priest. I'm trying. Don't send me to your class again. I don't want to know how to open doors.
Stop it.
So I got this little, this large jumbo roller ball, which is the same one you've got that's stuck under the fridge.
Yes.
And you know, I managed to put it on, and the cane is pretty impressive. It's and the elastic on it is brilliant, really strong, thick elastic. I was quite impressed by it, and I thought for the price, well, we'll see what it's like after a few days. I mean, it could be that it hits something, you know, and the
falls
whole
apart.
Thing falls to bits. But
like a clown
I don't
car.
Know, what it's, but it's very light as well, so it can't be carbon. It can't be carbon
not for
fiber. It might be fiberglass. But I don't know. I honestly don't know. So we'll see what it's like when we get it out in the real world and give it a try.
So
but,
you haven't took it for a test run yet?
Not yet. No, not yet. Okay. Well, for one other reason, which is kind of embarrassing, can't find it. Put it down somewhere. It's around here somewhere. I can't find it. So small, so tiny. I can't find it.
You need one of those things from the 80s. You used to have those key fobs that you whistle at. You remember? You whistle and you go beep, 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 beep.
That's right, yeah.
Never could get them to work. Okay, hang on. You said there was two problems with this cane. We know the first one is that it took a...
Yes.
It wasn't next day delivery. What's the second issue?
So it comes with a red stripe at the bottom. So the bottom segment has a red stripe. That means it is illegal to walk around with this.
Yep.
At least that's what I'm told. Basically, I think what it represents is deaf blindness in this country, right? And in this country, if you see a cane like that, it represents deaf blindness. But I don't think that's the case in other countries. I don't know. But I think it might be different in the US.
How many people know that in this country, well, in any country? How many people know that?
I don't think people know the difference. And look, to be perfectly honest, most people, when they meet me for the first time, shout at me anyway. So they probably already think I'm deaf.
Oh, right.
So, you know.
I think people just think it's a go faster stripe.
That's right. I'll just say that. I'll just say it's, I mean, look, I had a red cane. I had a full red cane. Every segment was red. So what does that tell you?
It's funny, though. I was thinking this today when I was walking home after my fridge shame.
Yes.
I've got one cane. And you were mentioning earlier, previously, I should say, about, you know, being locked out and we should all have and carry with us a spare cane just in case.
I mean, I if think it's I had, a smart thing to do, yeah.
Yeah, no, absolutely, because I am lost without my cane. It, you know, for whatever reason, I would be lost in every single definition of the word. I would be lost. And I've only got one cane. I sort of don't treat it with the respect it deserves. There, I've said it.
Yeah, and also there is something weird that happens in society. If you have a cane and people... They might not fully understand what the cane is, but they'll kind of understand that it's, you know, it's relevant to blindness, and or you may be low vision, or they just think that you need a walking aid. I get that a lot, but people don't understand why I'm using it the way I am and not leaning on it. So, okay, there's that. But then, you know, there is something weird that happens. When you don't have the cane and you tell someone you're blind, instantly you're transported back to the world pre-cane. Remember those days when people yes. just look at you like, well... What's wrong with you? Why can't you do this for yourself?
Yes, that's right.
And so, yeah. you know, it kind of makes things a bit awkward. So if you had, if your cane broke and you had to try and find your way to somewhere to get assistance or whatever, you'd be kind of struggling mentally with that in your head of, are they even going to believe that I'm just going to have to walk up with this broken mess in front of me and say, please help me. I don't know. It's just...
It does make such...
It's always handy to have a backup in your bag.
Such a difference though, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I think sometimes we just need to remember that. It makes a huge difference.
Well, it's my
difference.
Point about the, you know, why I get fed up with people going on about robot guide dogs. And it's like, you're kind of missing the point. What we have works and has worked, yes, for many centuries, but that doesn't mean it's a bad thing.
Yeah.
Something these days, something about just wanting to replace everything. And it's like, there's nothing wrong with the cane. Why are we trying to redefine it or redesign it entirely? I just don't see the value in that.
Apart from when it gets stuck under something or...
I'm all for new technology, but let's not bash the original ones, you know?
Hooray for the cane! Breaking news, we like yes. white canes.
Is it White Cane Day? No, because you know why? Every day is White Cane Day over here at Double Tap.
Beautiful.
Right, look, let's move on, because today we have an interview with a very interesting developer. Now, we had a chance to catch up with him, and it's going to become very noticeable to you. There's no way around this, unfortunately, but it's going to become very noticeable to you that he was in a cafe during the interview. It was the only place he could get a chance to sit down and talk to us. So Jeff Hara is the guy behind something you might have heard us talk about before, Type Ahead, which is using the latest in AI to basically become almost like a screen reading assistant for voiceover. So for voiceover users, you can, you know, download and use Type Ahead as an app and query on the screen items or, you know, if you say, for example, you wanted to press a particular button on the screen and you weren't sure where it was or you couldn't find it with your screen reader, you could ask Type Ahead via a very chat box style experience, as we're all getting used to with AI these days. Mm-hmm. You can ask it a question that will go off and do it for you. Now, it doesn't come without its complications. It's definitely an early stage. But I thought it was interesting to catch up with Jeff and find out where the idea came from. So Sean and I had a chance to catch up with him this week. And like I say, a very interesting conversation from a cafe in Kyoto.
Hi, my name is Jeff Hara. I'm the founder of Type Ahead AI, which is an AI-powered screen reader for the blind and the visually impaired. And I happen to be working out of Kyoto this evening. I'm in Japan right now, but most of the time I'm based in Seattle.
Well, first off, thank you so much for coming on to Double Tap. It's great to meet you.
Yeah, it's great to meet you both too.
So tell us first off, because for people who are new to hearing about Type Ahead for the very first time, I mean, immediately hearing, hang on, AI-powered screen reader for blind people on Mac? Okay. Mm-hmm. What's that about? So tell us the genesis of this idea.
Yeah. I guess my background is that I've been a software engineer and I worked at a handful of big tech companies, but the most recent, or I guess like where I spent a lot of my time was at Twitter. And after it got bought out by Elon, I kind of went through this period of like, what am I doing with my life? And I got really interested in doing a startup in general. And I guess just with like ChatGPT coming out, the idea that really interested me the most was this intersection of AI and accessibility. And so the product that I'm trying to build right now is to try to fit that need and fit that market. And I think that AI presents like this really awesome opportunity to change how we interact with computers. And I think the best place to start is with the people who are, you know, super early adopters and people who are really interested in trying out a new way of experiencing computers. And so that's kind of where I landed with working with people who are blind and visually impaired.
And you were at Twitter, right?
Yeah, that's right. So I was at Twitter up until about February, end of February of this past or of last year. So I got to stay through the transition of like the Twitter 2.0x transition, if you will. And it was pretty chaotic, and I think it really like shook up, I guess, what I wanted to do out of my career. It made me question a lot of things about like, you know, I guess my future as a software engineer. And, I think it kind of kicked me down this like entrepreneurial path.
Wow. There's a whole other conversation. We need to get you back. That's, that is so interesting. So were you working at Twitter in terms of accessibility? What made you, because AI at the moment is just breaking through so many barriers, breaking into so many different sectors. What made you choose accessibility or a screen reader?
Yeah, you know, that's a great question. I wasn't working on accessibility at Twitter. I was working on search and recommendations for the most part. And so at some point I was just trying to look for different applications of AI, and I knew how to tinker with some code, but I didn't really have a good customer to work for. And so when I quit my job in December, so I'd switched jobs after Twitter, but I left my job in December and I spent about a month just trying to go to different meetups and different networking events to just talk to people in different industries and learn about the types of problems that they might have and try to figure out if AI could be applied to solve their problems. And I think the one that I had the best response was when I visited this blind community center in Seattle. It's called Lighthouse for the Blind. And when I talked to some of the people who were there, I asked them, you know, what it's like to use a screen reader. And they kind of showed me like little demos of how to use it. And it became very clear to me that like this felt like the type of thing that AI would be really good at solving. So if you could just give it like a natural language command, then you don't have to know all these keyboard shortcuts and like basically fight with the computer to move the cursor around. And so I think that's kind of like, I think I just saw that demo and I was like, I think I could solve this. And so that's kind of what kicked that chain of events. I'm not sure how best to put it, but it wasn't like I had some personal connection. I'm a sighted person, but I think it was just kind of like serendipitous in terms of deciding to go visit a blind community center and ask them what they think. But also just like a combination of the people that I met and the way that they were excited about the product idea, and I think that all helped a lot.
Well, look, as Sean and I know too well, because we talk about it so much, you know, one of the things we sometimes get a little bit irritated by, and maybe it's just me, but I sometimes get a little bit irritated when people come along and just say, hey, I've got a great idea, this will work for you as a blind person, and they don't speak to any blind people. But you did. Actually did go to that place. You spoke to blind people. And what were their reactions to the idea of using AI as a screen reader?
Yeah, it's definitely a big mix. One of the other places that I posted very early on was on applevis.com. I kind of just stumbled upon it. The people at the Lighthouse for the Blind had told me that those forum existed. And I had some sort of like toy code that I'd put together, but I basically just like shared the idea with that forum and asked them what they thought. And I got like, I don't know, dozens of comments immediately just from people, good and bad. Like a lot of people were very cynical about like another sighted person trying to, you know, write software for them.
That was,
you
know, Steven.
I can totally understand that. I can totally understand that. But there were a lot of people who also said like, look, I think it's really awesome that someone is trying to solve this type of problem. And it's an overlooked problem, I think. I guess speaking as someone who worked at a lot of these big tech companies, accessibility ends up being like this like little checklist item. You have to make sure you apply the right labels and blah, blah, blah to be, make your product shippable, but it's not something that you design around necessarily. So it does kind of feel like an afterthought to a lot of big tech companies, I think. And so trying to build something that's like accessibility first, I think, is kind of unique. And so that's kind of how I've been trying to think about this.
How would you describe what you've done here? What I mean, the trouble with AI, it's almost all encompassing, because we've been talking about how we think AI is going to change how we use technology anyway. It's almost the ultimate interface, right? Would you say that this is a screen reader, or is this just a very accessibility-aware voice assistant? How would you actually describe this?
Yeah, that's a great question. I know one of the most common pieces of feedback that I get is that it's not really a screen reader, because screen readers do a specific thing. It has a cursor. It can like read out some text, and that's not really what I'm doing. In some ways, like I'm intentionally not doing that, because I feel like it already works. You don't need to reinvent the wheel there. I think like the piece that feels missing is the co-pilot slash agent kind of experience of the computer operating itself. And the reason why I like drawing the comparison with the screen reader is to kind of say like, here's how things work now, here's how things could work in the future. But that's not to say that this is a replacement of a screen reader necessarily. And so I think that's where the terminology is a little bit weird. I think I also don't like the word co-pilot and agent that much, because it doesn't really mean anything to me yet. I think like there's not a ton of clear examples of what that experience feels like. So I think to your point, like AI can do so much, but that's another way of saying that we don't really know what it can do.
That is so true. And I am one. I think we're both 100% with you on that.
Yep.
Because we have this conversation, especially around Copilot, right? We're always thinking, well, what can this thing do? How is it going to make a difference to me? And you know, it's so interesting that you come up with this idea, because this is exactly what I think AI can do for us, in the sense that, and I say us being blind people, we can get the benefit of being able to navigate our systems with ease. There's so much of the web that's inaccessible, and this is something that I'm sure you've heard. So much of it that's inaccessible, but we know there's the button. We know there's the element there we want to do. I mean, for example, you go to, let's just say, Amazon, which is fairly accessible, but let's use it as an example. You know, you go to Amazon, you want to add something to a basket, you know, find the yellow toaster, you know, under $50, add it to my basket, pay using my credit card ending 1234. That's kind of what we want to do. And if AI could help us do that, that would be brilliant, right? Because it would take away all those accessibility hurdles, all those keystrokes you have to learn, all that navigation you have to do.
Exactly.
Is that your thinking? Is that is almost like it is an assistant, but it's also a screen reader? Is that combination?
Yeah, I guess I'm trying to like put my thoughts in order here, but I think like what I like about focusing on people who are blind and visually impaired is that it's not easy to do a lot of these things, I think, compared to if you could use your mouse and could see the screen. Like I had a user interview with someone where they showed me how to use JAWS, and it was just like a Zoom call, but they were showing me like, oh, this is how I put something in an item, and it took, you know, a good amount of time to find the buy button. And I think like Amazon's whole sell is that, you know, they have this like one click buy, and so it's supposed to be so slick and so easy, but they also put so much garbage on the screen that it's hard to actually do that task if you're using a screen reader. And so I think like that was one of the use cases that jumped out to me as like, okay, this has to be solved, and it's definitely tractable.
And to be fair, that's because as a sighted person, you can take your mouse, you can take the cursor past all that garbage and go straight to the button, whereas we need to find the button. We have to navigate past all that, listen through all that sometimes, or try and jump past it with headings or whatever else, or through links to get to that specific button. That's assuming we know what that button is. Is it a button? Is it a link?
It does seem like there's a lot of like overhead. Like you have to keep a lot of things in memory about like how a certain website is laid out. And I think that's like one of the things that, you know, as it's like screen reader 2.0, if you will, I think like a good version of that would be, you don't have to think as hard. You don't have to remember as much, and it makes your life easier, hopefully. I think that would be like the longer term goal here.
So what your software is offering is a natural language, a natural way to ask for a task to be performed, you know, send an email to so-and-so with the subject line here and the message and whatever else it may be. But when it comes to accessibility, and in the example you just gave there, or Stephen just gave about inaccessible elements on a website, let's say, is there any way that AI can help with that? We've seen something on the iPhone, in iOS, called screen recognition. And it tries to identify any, you mentioned unlabeled buttons earlier on, labeling elements. I mean, that is an issue for a screen reader user if it just says button, 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 and no idea what it is. So is that something you may be working towards, about the ability to understand or break down the elements of a website or an app or whatever it may be, and actually make it accessible to screen readers?
Yeah, and I think one of the features that I tried to build to help solve this was this way to take a screenshot of whatever's underneath the cursor and then have GPT describe what it's seeing. And that ends up being like probably the majority of how people today use the app. I guess like the way that I'm picturing it is like, it's kind of like a Be My AI for your computer, which, you know, to be honest, I haven't done enough research to know if such a thing already exists, but that is the thing that I'm trying to build, I suppose. I think I've heard of something called VOCR, which I think is like an open source thing that has some sort of similar features, but I'm not sure if it's like super interactive, and I haven't played around with it myself. So I think that's one of the things that.
I think you need to be a little bit more advanced as a voiceover user to be able to benefit from that truly.
I see.
What we're looking for, I guess, is something that's a little bit more easier on the entry level. People who are. Yeah, exactly. A bit more user friendly. It's got a UI. You know, it's not. As soon as I have to be honest, whenever I see
GitHub.
And
that's what accessibility is all about. So.
Yeah.
It makes sense.
But whenever I see GitHub involved, I panic because I think, what does this mean? What do I have to download? What are these elements I have to.
Do you know what?
To go off and find.
That is an excellent example, actually. I've been downloading some things recently from GitHub and navigating through that and knowing, you know what? All I want to do is download this, the executable or the installer. Oh. For this project. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And trying to find that using a screen reader is really difficult, especially if you're not particularly techie. I don't know what this fork means or whatever. I don't even know what area I should be. So the ability to just go and say, can you download this from GitHub, the installer from GitHub, would be absolutely amazing.
Yeah, you know, after this, I'll try to see how well my thing is doing at that. But that's a great example.
So let's talk about the depth this can go to, right? Because from my... Sure. Early reading of this and early trials of it, I kind of immediately, as we all do as blind people, and I think we all do this as people these days, you get something that comes along like this, you get so excited, so you jump in and you say, right, can it do this? Can it do that? Can it do this next thing? And I immediately opened up my audio editor, which is called Audacity, which is not the most accessible app in the world on the Mac anymore, sadly. And I thought, oh, it can read the elements for me. And it couldn't see them. It kept giving me errors saying, oh, don't know what you're talking about, or, you know, in computer language, obviously.
Right.
Go get lost, Stephen, go and do something else, I think was the suggestion. But and that would be the right answer. But
we hear that a lot.
We get that a lot. But I do think I do wonder, actually, what is the depth to this? How much can this software see on my system?
I guess just to, you know, peel back what's behind the hood. What it's really doing is just inspecting all of the accessibility labels and elements at once. And so every application that supports accessibility elements would kind of structure their application as like this big accessibility tree. And so what my software is doing is it's parsing that entire tree, throwing it at ChatGPT and deciding what to do with that. So at present, if the app itself doesn't support any sort of accessibility, then the app doesn't really know about that unless if it's using the vision capabilities. But the vision capabilities isn't that integrated with taking actions yet. And so I think that's like one of the gaps that I'm trying to, that I want to prioritize next, basically. So the apps that don't have accessibility labels, can this app still be, or can my app still be useful for that? Because that seems like the thing that people have the most trouble with today. But it's a lot easier said than done. There's a lot of things that are still not super working on the ChatGPT side of things. I think that's not so good at locating positions. So if you give it like a picture and say like click on the right side of the picture, like it doesn't really know that level of granularity yet. I expect it'll all get there, and it'll get to a point where you can say like give me the XY coordinate on this picture to click. But I think until then, you might have to do a little bit of, you know, engineering and elbow grease to get that to work, which is the type of thing that I still haven't done yet.
And to be fair, you've been perfectly honest and open about that. I read your post on AppleViz when you first posted it, I think, because as you said, there was lot of interest and everyone was, oh, let's check this out. So, and you did say, you know, you're just, this is very much the beginnings. This is very much you're playing with the code. So I totally understand you're just accessing the accessibility layer at the minute and grabbing the elements out of there. But it's just, as Stephen said, it's always, oh, hang on, if it could do that, what if it could do that? We always want more. And trying to make elements that aren't, visible to the accessibility API, that would be very cool. But even just the ability, said, the interaction, and this is what excites me about AI, being able to interact with technology in a human-like way, it's a game changer.
I think it also makes a difference for people who get or who lose their vision later in life, because I think that's the group of people that are going to struggle a lot with learning how to use a screen reader and becoming proficient at them. And so, you know, I think that if you think about employment rates among the blind, one of the big barriers is, you know, needing to use a computer. And I think I'm not super well versed in this, to be honest, but I think that, like, if we can make computers more accessible for people, that will help people find jobs and retain jobs. And I think that will have a lot of impact on people's lives as well, not just from like a, it's like I can send an email kind of thing, but it'll be like, yes, I can become more independent and I don't have to, you know, learn new types of keyboard shortcuts.
It breaks down the barriers.
Expressing that very well, but
for accessing technology in every way.
I do wonder though, exactly. 10 years down the line, do you think we'll look back at this moment and say, this was the beginning of what became the new big operating system, which ultimately was just a button or, you know, a microphone and, you know, a screen with a line of text on it? Because that feels like the way it's going for everything.
Yeah.
It's just going to be, we're just going to have a conversational or, you know, type 2 device interface. And that's going
to
be it.
If I had to totally speculate, I think like the parallel that I draw is with the personal computing revolution and the keyboard and screen, the GUI basically, versus AI and the natural user interface, if you will. So just like being able to use voice and being able to use gestures, even with like the Apple Vision Pro, they have like a lot of gesture based movements. I think it'll be interesting to see if like voice and gestures will make AI easier to adopt the same way that mouse and keyboards and GUIs, or keyboards isn't correct, but the mouse and the GUI made personal computers more accessible to like a mass public, I suppose. And so I think that's my bet in all of this. Like at some point we're going to be like, yeah, this is obvious. Of course we're going to talk to our computers. It might take some time to get there though.
So what is the next plan then? Because obviously this is available now. People can go and download it. There is a fee, right? I remember there's a fee attached to it as well. And there's difference. There's a free version, there's a paid for version. Talk us through all
that. So I guess what I want to be cognizant of is the fact that a lot of people who are blind are unemployed. And so they might be living off of government assistance and they might need if I charge like $100 an hour or whatever, that's not going to be super helpful for them. And so I have like a free tier, which is going to be using GPT-3, and then a premium tier at $15 a month, that's going to be using GPT-4. And so really the difference that you can think about there is less likelihood of errors and longer context windows and just better performance overall. But I think like the bigger customers that I want to go after are the government agencies that basically supply assistive technologies to their constituents and their patrons. I'm also looking at partnerships with schools for the blind. I think a lot of universities might be interested in so far as like meeting ADA requirements and enabling their students to perform well in schools. I think like one thing that's helpful about thinking about this from an assistive technology standpoint is that it's really easy to align with companies and businesses and government agencies and nonprofits, because as long as the tool is genuinely helping people, that's something that is going to be aligned with their goals too. So I think that's kind of how I'm thinking about it from a business standpoint.
And we'll hear from Jeff a little bit later here on in the program, because Jeff, as he mentioned at the top of the interview, worked at Twitter. And Sean and I were quite interested in delving into that subject a little bit more to find out about his experience working at Twitter during the takeover by Elon Musk. We'll get into that conversation as well with Jeff next. Plus, Grace Schofield is here with the Double Tap News headlines.
Follow Double Tap on social media at Double Tap On Air and subscribe to the podcast wherever you get your podcasts and email us feedback@doubletaponair.com. We'll be right back. Call the Double Tappers now, 1-877-803-4567, or email us feedback@doubletaponair.com.
Okay, before we get back to Jeff, let's hear the very latest in Double Tap news brought to us, as always, by Grace Schofield.
Thanks, guys. It may not surprise you to learn that this week we're starting with artificial intelligence. However, this time we're talking about it within screen reading technology. JAWS, the popular screen reader for Windows, has introduced PictureSmart AI. This allows users to get detailed descriptions of images from a simple set of keyboard commands using two different AI models. The Vice President of Software and Product Development at Vispero is Ryan Jones, and he told DoubleTap why they chose to provide users with multiple responses.
So when we started having our beta group test this, originally we had both services results. So basically think of like the more results link that you heard that had all the detailed stuff. We had that coming in first. And the feedback we were hearing is that's really good, but a lot of times you just want something quick. You know, maybe if it's a small icon on the screen, like a checkbox icon or a thumbs up icon or something, you don't necessarily need a 200 word description of that. So what the feedback we heard was give us a short result. And then if we want to hear more, let us use a link to get more and get real detailed and hear both services.
Glidance is a new type of mobility aid, with the company behind it calling it the world's first self-guided walking companion. The device, which is still in early stages of development, uses navigational robotics and AI to steer you along your route. It can map out the best route, show points of interest, and avoid obstacles. However, the person using the device remains in control, pushing it as you walk. Glidance CEO Amos Miller gave DoubleTap a striking description of the current design.
Some people ask me if it's a vacuum cleaner, and that's just because it still hasn't gone through its final iterations of design, so it's a bit bulkier at the bottom. But that's also an image to have. So you hold on to that handle, and you have those two wheels on the ground. I would not really compare it to a cane because you don't hold it like a cane and you don't tap it like a cane. You don't move it around like a cane. You don't use it like a cane. If anything, the experience is more akin to that of working a dog.
World-renowned audio tech company Zoom have launched a new series of recorders with new accessibility features built in. The company's new Essentials range of recorders are aimed at everyone, from budding podcasters to musicians. The new accessibility features offer voice guidance for visually impaired users who may struggle to read the menus on screen. Plus, there are audible cues for starting and stopping recording. In this sneak peek of an interview that will be aired next week on Double Tap, Samuel Green from the company told Stephen and Sean the challenges they faced in bringing these new features to the devices.
We had a lot to learn about putting this kind of system into a recorder. There was extra hardware that was needed. There was this completely separate audio circuit that we needed to have built in for it. How do you balance the volumes of the audio you're recording to the voice guide? And those were a lot of things we had to learn. It ended up being about 25% of our total software development time for these products was dedicated to the accessibility system. So, and we're really proud of how it came out, and thus far the response has been really positive. But we knew we were going to get some feedback. We knew we could get on the base, but maybe not hit an absolute grand slam on it. And so we're gathering some feedback.
The U.S. House of Representatives has approved a significant piece of legislation this week that could lead to TikTok being prohibited in the United States. This bill mandates that ByteDance, the Chinese company that owns TikTok, divest its majority share within 6 months or face a ban in the U.S. Despite receiving strong bipartisan support in the House, the bill must still be approved by the Senate and signed into law by the President. Concerns about China's potential influence through TikTok have been a long-standing issue among lawmakers. ByteDance is the Beijing-based parent company of TikTok, which was established in 2012 and is incorporated in the Cayman Islands, with operations extending throughout Europe and the United States. Staying with social media, a former employee of X has spoken out about his time at the company during the takeover by Elon Musk. Jeff Hara said the period from Musk's takeover to making the personal decision to leave was exhausting, but he wished he'd been able to stay longer to help contribute to the work needing done.
It was really tough to find a job at the time because that was kind of like when a lot of companies were doing layoffs, so not a lot of people were hiring. And so when I did land something, it was just like a huge relief, I guess. And I know a lot of people were kind of jumping ship around the time that I did, and I personally kind of felt like every day felt really miserable at some point. I just like wasn't sleeping. I wasn't like, you really had no idea who was going to get fired. And so it was very stressful at that point. I took a week off before starting my next thing. And, you know, my sister-in-law came into town. We hung out. We just, you know, my wife and I and my sister-in-law, we went like to Napa and, you know, explored a bunch, and I got to like take a real vacation, I think, for a time in a while. But I think like the weird part about it was that I felt a lot of regret for not trying to stick it out and trying to like ride it out a little bit longer, which is something that was really weird to like deal with, considering how miserable I was at the time. I felt like I could have been a little bit more hardcore. I could have stuck it out a little bit harder. And I think part of that is what fueled me to want to do a startup, being like, I think I want to challenge myself again, but on my own terms, and not just feeling like I'm kind of at the mercy of some like all-powerful billionaire.
You can listen to more of Jeff's story on last Friday's episode of Double Tap, or on the Double Tap website now. That's doubletaponair.com. And finally, AMI has submitted a proposal to the CRTC, Canada's media regulator, to adjust the monthly wholesale rates charged to broadcasting distribution undertakings for carrying AMI TV and AMI Tele, with the intention to enhance service offerings across the network. Bosses are calling for the public's support in the form of letters to be submitted, highlighting AMI's crucial role in providing accessible content and representing Canadians with disabilities. Supporters can submit their letters through the CRTC website, email AMI directly, or contact the network for assistance. For more details and contact information, visit AMI.ca. That's it for the Double Tap News this week. I'm Grace Schofield.
Wow, Sean, so many stories we could dive into today. We just don't have the time.
Not enough time. Never enough time.
Maybe we'll get into those stories next week, I think. There's plenty there to talk about. And of course, CSUN is going to be the big focus of our attentions next week for sure. But for now, though, we'll come back to our conversation with Jeff Hara. Now, we spoke to Jeff last week from the Cafe in Kyoto, which sounds quite nice, doesn't it? That is a lovely sounding cafe.
Yes.
It does. It sounded like a lovely cafe, the kind of place I'd quite enjoy going. But we had a chat about all things Type Ahead, of course, or Typey Head, as I mentioned, what it calls on my screen reader. But we also talked about Twitter because Jeff worked at Twitter, and I was keen to learn about his experience there during the takeover by Elon Musk. I've got to ask you, Jeff, because, you know, being at Twitter, a lot of us in the blind community and wider disability community were horrified when the accessibility team were just sacked, along with many other people. It wasn't just accessibility team, but a lot of people lost their jobs, as you well know, and I'm sure you saw that from the inside. Mm-hmm. But from an accessibility viewpoint, if we just zoom into that particular area for a moment, what was the feeling inside Twitter at that time when that whole team had gone? Because that did certainly feel pretty tough to us as a disability community. It almost felt like that was a signal from the bosses and the boss at Twitter about his thoughts on disabled people using Twitter.
I guess I've to be very honest, like I was so concerned about my own job security at the time that it was not on my radar.
Understandable. Yeah.
I think like, as you're kind of alluding to, like a lot of people lost their jobs. I think if I had to totally ballpark it, I think it's probably running at like 10 to 20% of the original staff, based on the people who were let go and people who left on their own, people who just like got burned out over time. I think I was part of that third category.
What was the first day like for you not being there? Coming out of that experience and sort of starting out on your own, what was that first day like? We've all been there. We've all left a job and we've had that first day. What was it like for you coming out of that?
It's a great question. I have to like put myself back in my shoes from back then. It was really tough to find a job at the time because that was kind of like when a lot of companies were doing layoffs, so not a lot of people were hiring. And so when I did land something, it was just like a huge relief, I guess. And I know a lot of people were kind of jumping ship around the time that I did, and I personally kind of felt like every day felt really miserable at some point. I just like wasn't sleeping. I wasn't like, you really had no idea who was going to get fired. And so it was very stressful at that point. I took a week off before starting my next thing. And, you know, my sister-in-law came into town. We hung out. We just, you know, my wife and I and my sister-in-law, we went like to Napa and, you know, explored a bunch, and I got to like take a real vacation, I think, for first time in a while. But I think like the weird part about it was that I felt a lot of regret for not trying to stick it out and trying to like ride it out a little bit longer, which is something that was really weird to like deal with, considering how miserable I was at the time. I felt like I could have been a little bit more hardcore. I could have stuck it out a little bit harder. And I think part of that is what fueled me to want to do a startup, being like, I think I want to challenge myself again, but on my own terms, and not just feeling like I'm kind of at the mercy of some like all powerful billionaire.
you need that control, right? You can't live. It's okay trying to say, you know, I should have just bore it for a little bit longer. But if you're under that amount of stress, you know, not knowing what's going to happen from day to day to day, that's no way to live or work.
And it took me a long time to like kind of accept that, I think.
Did you ever meet Elon?
I did. There was one day he called a bunch of engineers into a room. I'd already gone home, so I'd like call in by video call. And I was so nervous. I was like texting my family being like, oh my God, I'm about to talk to Elon. And what was really funny about it was like we went around the room and I'll just like introduce myself or ourselves. And I'm not very good at talking in front of people. Like I'll just like trip over my words and get really like sweaty basically. So when it came to my turn, I like totally rambled. I was like, oh, da, 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 da. And I think I even like tripped over my own name. And after I was done, Elon was like, okay, let's take a break. And then I didn't see him after that. So I was like, oh my God, I can't believe I just blew that.
Everyone feels like intro. That. It's fine. There's nothing worse when you're doing a introduction day and they say, right, let's just go around the room and just introduce yourself and tell us something about yourself. Oh no, awful.
but it is hard when it's him, right? I mean, it's not just a manager. It's the big boss. It's the guy who the world is looking to at that point. Everybody wants to know what he's thinking, wants to know what his intentions are. And I guess you did too. You know, if you don't mind me asking, what was your initial thoughts when he came into town? Because like, not everybody thought it was a bad idea that Elon takes on Twitter. So what were you feeling at the time? Were you filled with dread or did you think, well, this could work out?
I was very optimistic going into it. I think like the way that it was pitched to me, which made a lot of sense at the time, was that like it's basically like Twitter's becoming a startup again, but it's also funded by like the richest person on earth. And so it's like almost bound to succeed just by virtue of having unlimited resources essentially, and just being led by someone who has an amazing track record of building companies. And so I don't know. I think like I felt positive that something would work out, and maybe there was going to be like some Twitter mafia, if you've heard of like the PayPal mafia being like a thing. The people who kind of like went through the ringer of PayPal ended up becoming really successful. And so I was, I think, maybe selfishly thinking, okay, maybe, you know, the light at the end of the tunnel is that like by going through the ringer of Elon and kind of going through this like really intense experience, I would come out stronger out of the other end. And so that's kind of how I was thinking about it. But when it actually happened and when people were actually getting laid off and when like things were just insanely chaotic, it was hard to be that optimistic all the time, I guess. I think like for several months, I literally thought that Twitter was going to basically like collapse under its own weight, but somehow it keeps working every day. You know, I think that's what kind of blows my mind about like the people who were there and the work that was done there. Like the infrastructure is just rock solid.
And that's because of the work you guys did way back at the beginning, right? So it's been there for a long time. It's not, there's a lot of legacy in there, and that has to be exactly commended. And it's the same reason why, even though when the accessibility team were all fired, a lot of us were upset about it, and rightly so. But there was also that sense of, well, there was a good foundational piece of work done. So this wasn't a case of the entire building was going to collapse at any given second. However, it would be like an old house that if you leave it long enough, will eventually start to fall apart because no one's maintaining it. That was the bigger issue, I think, for a lot of us. And we're starting to see bits of that. But also, you know, as new features come in, they're not getting accessibility tested, all of that. But it's interesting because, you know, working in there and now being outside and looking back in particular, it must be interesting for you. But I want to ask you, you know, from today's perspective, when you look at Twitter or X as it is now, although everyone still calls it Twitter, what's your view on it now? Do you still go on there and are you still part of it? You still on there yourself?
Yeah, it's a really good resource for niche interests. Especially if you're interested in AI, all the big, you know, ML and AI researchers are on Twitter and posting all the time. It's just like where I get all of my, you know, news from the, I don't know, authorities of that area. And so I get a lot of value out of that. I don't use it as much as maybe I used to, but a lot of it was just like I had to delete it from my phone because otherwise I'd spend too much time on it. So it wasn't like it lost value. It was more like I got to spend more time focusing on my app and my stuff. And it was becoming
a life. Life.
Oh, yeah. I'm against Enjoy it. Life. Yeah, digital definitely. Life. That's all you need.
I think just from the AI angle, especially, like I thought it was helping me because you could just like stay up to date with all the latest AI trends and, you know, everyone releases their demos and stuff on Twitter. But I ended up finding it being more of a distraction than anything. And it just, you can get pulled in so many directions and follow a million different trends. And then I think it's better to just have a little bit of conviction about what you're doing. And
it's the world's biggest collection of people who shout at each other. That's the bottom line, as far as I'm concerned. So,
that should have been our thing. Instead, it should have been like Twitter, the biggest collection of people who shout at each other.
That's the tagline. Exactly. Yes, you can have that one.
But you did find that in some ways the experience has kind of led you to where you are today. So I think we can be thankful to Elon, if for nothing else, this. we can say thanks to him.
Well, not,
it's a bit disingenuous to thank Elon for your work, but no, you've done the work on this. But no, it does sound like what you're doing is fascinating. And you know, just for people who want to go and get it, tell us where they can find Type Ahead, although Typey Head is what my screen reader announces it as, which is kind of funny.
I need to figure out how to fix that. yeah, it's typeahead.ai. I have a download link for the Mac app just on the website. At the bottom of the page, there's like a form where you can sign up for the newsletter, and I'll email people who do that with updates on the Windows version. So those are the best ways to contact. My email, people could reach out to me if they want. It's jeff.hara@typeahead.ai. Hara is H-A-R-A. I'm happy to take like questions and, you know, feedback from people. So
brilliant.
And how are you spelling Jeff?
Oh, yeah, J-E-F-F, perfect. The right way. Yeah,
well done. The right way. That's the same with Sean. Yeah. It has to be S-H-E-W-E-U.
The correct way.
W-N. Oh, wrong, Sean. Terrible. Sorry. Listen, thank you so much for coming on. Thanks for sharing your story with us. It's been really interesting today to talk to you and to get your take on all of this. I think more development, the better. If I buy maybe 3 or 4 subscriptions to Type Ahead, will you reduce the amount of time you spend on the Windows version for me and just focus on the Mac?
Don't listen to
I don't want Sean getting any improved
it's
version
a trap.
Of this. Jeff, thanks so much for coming on.
No, thank you for having me. It's been really fun.
Thanks, Jeff.
Many thanks to Jeff Hara for joining us this hour. It's been a very interesting conversation with Jeff. And, of course, Type Ahead sounds amazing, as it does. And, you know, well worth checking out. Still a lot of work to be done, as Jeff says himself. Although I, you know, would rather he wasn't working on the Windows version and instead just focused on Mac. But that's just me.
Windows version is coming. I can't wait. Yeah, very interesting project. As I said, it kind of blurs the lines. What's a screen reader? What's a voice assistant? Interesting to see where this goes.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, we'll look forward to your comments on this. Feedback at doubletaponair.com. You can call us on 1-877-803-4567. Or you can find us on social media. We're across social media at Double Tap and Double Tap On Air. Coming up on Sunday on YouTube, you can listen to Rebecca Rosenberg from Reboca, the app that helps low vision people. She'll be talking to us all about Apple Vision Pro and her experience. Have a great weekend. Thanks, Sean.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Join us weekly for The Pulse with host Joita Gupta, who brings us closer to issues impacting the disability community across Canada. Watch The Pulse on YouTube or listen wherever you download your AMI podcasts.